Welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vinken from The Athletic in today for Joe Rexrow. Ryan Porth with you as well on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe continues to be on vacation. He'll be back next week. Adam in today and tomorrow as well. Adam, welcome back. Thanks for joining us for the second morning in a row. How's everything going? Did you survive yesterday? Did you get you a nap in?
I did not.
Oh,
I had a busy day yesterday after I left the studio, but I did have a lot of fun. Looking forward to another great show here on Robbie and Rex Road.
That's right. It's going to be a good day. Great day here today on the show. Ole Miss fan Adam Vinken in the house.
Ole Miss fan.
Got a few text messages about that yesterday. They thought it was the funniest thing ever. So you're making the people happy. Way to go. A new Ole Miss bandwagon fan.
Isn't that our jobs, to make people happy on their drives to work?
Yes, it is. And you accomplished that yesterday, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Ryan Porth, how are we doing? What's going on?
Doing great.
Porth's short and sweet today, this morning, on Wednesday morning. Porth's lying. He's not doing great because the Cincinnati Reds continue to... That bullpen's something else, my friend. It's always something with those Reds.
Don't get me started. Do not get me started on that bullpen.
It's always something with those Cincinnati Reds, and this year it's definitely the bullpen.
Yep.
Fun to watch.
Nope.
He's so upset today. We got a lot to get to here today on the show, but we begin with reaction to Game 1 of the NBA Finals last night. A 118-105 win for the Phoenix Suns. They take a 1-0 series lead. Giannis, he played last night, was doubtful for the game this time yesterday on the show, but found a way to play. But in the end, Adam, Phoenix just too much for Milwaukee last night. Chris Paul, a great game, 32 points, 9 assists. 4 rebounds. Devin Booker was awesome as well. 27 points from Booker. And then DeAndre Ayton, I mean, 22 points, 19 rebounds. It's a pretty good stat line for the big three there with the Phoenix Suns. They really controlled that game from start to finish, and an impressive showing from the Phoenix Suns in Game 1.
Indeed. First of all, great uniforms for the Phoenix Suns.
I love them. I saw Stillman yelling into the clouds last night about the Suns uniform. I think they're great.
What did he say?
He just said he's glad the NFL doesn't let teams wear jerseys like that in the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God.
Like, the Suns have been wearing these jerseys the whole playoffs. But I think they're awesome.
They're great.
I think there's a lot of NBA jerseys nowadays that are awful. Mm-hmm. I think the Suns jerseys is not one of them. I think they're pretty cool.
I like them. I like the color scheme. I like the way it represents where they're from. I believe it's their city jersey.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy. I'm wearing my Zion Williamson, New Orleans Pelicans City t-shirt today. So very much enjoy the NBA City jerseys. But Chris Paul must have sipped from the fountain of youth before the game last night. He was excellent.
He was.
I was surprised to find out after the game he has 73 points over his past two games, the clinching game of the Western Conference Finals against the Los Angeles Clippers, and then 32 last night against the Bucks, which is tied for the most points he has scored over a two-game span in his career, regular season or playoffs. You know, that third quarter, he basically put that game away single-handedly.
Yep.
And like I said yesterday, I would not mind seeing Chris Paul win his first NBA championship and his first trip to the NBA Finals. You, on the other hand, disparaged Chris Paul.
I did.
And because our show is available in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts, someone in Phoenix must have sent that to Chris Paul. And he said, I don't know who Robbie Stanley is, but he's on my S list this evening.
Apparently
so. And he stuck it to you, man.
He did. It was a great performance last night from Chris Paul. It was amazing, the defensive strategy from the Bucks of just – not ever stopping the lob pass from Chris Paul to DeAndre Ayton one time the whole game. Like, Chris Paul would just drive to the lane. He would draw two defenders over his way, and Chris Paul would just chuck the ball straight up in the air, and DeAndre Ayton would slam dunk on the alley-oop. 22 points, 19 rebounds last night from Ayton. And look, they got some timely shots as well from Bridges. He made a couple of big threes in that game. Saw a little bit of action last night from Frank the Tank, Frank Kaminsky, getting in there as well. But an impressive showing. We said this yesterday heading into the game. I like that there's something different in the NBA Finals. I thought the atmosphere in Phoenix was awesome, which not typically known for a sporting hotbed out in Phoenix with the atmospheres that they bring to the table, but I enjoyed it last night. It was a pleasurable experience watching game one of the NBA Finals.
The Suns, by the way, overcame a one-point outing from your boy, Jay Crowder,
yeah,
who went 0 for 8 in 33 minutes.
He'll get you to the finals. Once he gets there, it's a little bit rough.
Phoenix is an interesting sports market. The Arizona Diamondbacks lost like 800 consecutive games.
They did.
At one point. That's a bit of an exaggeration.
But not much of one. They were really – it was rough.
Was it just road games or overall games?
It was road games where they lost both. Like 25 in a row.
It was both. I mean, they had a stretch where they could not win a single game.
But – you know, what's interesting about the Phoenix market when it comes to sports is you have the Suns and the Diamondbacks in downtown Phoenix. You have the Suns Arena and Chase Field in downtown Phoenix. And you have the Arizona Coyotes and the Cardinals in Glendale.
Yeah, they're out yonder a little bit.
Which is not particularly close to Phoenix. It's not far, but, you know, especially with traffic, it can be hard to get there. And it is hard for citizens of Phoenix to trek out to Glendale, depending on which side of the city you live on. So
we need to get a daily segment sponsored by for somebody to just sponsor Porth for here's your mundane sports update of the day. They could not win a game. Thank you, Porth.
I mean, it is a true statement. Yes. It's
there's a stretch where they just could not win a game.
They could not win a game.
It's lacking in facts, in numbers, and statistics, but the thesis statement is accurate. They could not win a game.
It's always a treat to see how quickly we can get Ryan Porth off his game, back there laughing and crying in the studio. And so far today, it was about 6.5 minutes in. So that's a good start.
I will be curious to see the ratings for last night's game. We talked about this yesterday, about how perhaps because neither team is in a big market, nor are they considered marquee teams in the NBA. Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have Chris Paul, but you know it's not LeBron James, it's not Kevin Durant, it's not James Harden. I'll be curious to see what the ratings are. I imagine that they were pretty good last night because I just think that there might be intrigue because it's not the usual matchup. I think sports fans in general, not diehard NBA fans, but sports fans in general might have been experiencing LeBron fatigue or Golden State fatigue or what have you. So, like I said, I won't be surprised if overall this NBA Finals series is low rated, but I think last night's game, I imagine, did pretty well.
Well, now the question moving forward for this series is, like, can Giannis get back to somewhat full capacity? Like, you could tell last night he was gutting it out. The stat line's not bad. 20 points, 17 rebounds. You'll take that. But he only shot 11 times last night. And it just didn't feel like he was quite up to full speed. Can he progress as the series goes on and get healthier? Or is the fact that he's playing on it now, it's going to be what it is, and you've got to find a way to overcome it if you're him at this point? I mean, Middleton last night, he had 29 points, only 12 of 26 shooting, 5 of 12 from 3. Brooke Lopez, 17 points. I didn't think Drew Holiday was very good last night, and that's really the key. Like, if the Bucks can find a way to get those three guys going at the same time, and that's Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Drew Holiday, they're tough to beat. But they've had a lot of difficulty really getting all three of those guys going at the same time. And it just felt like with Giannis back in there, Drew Holiday just kind of got taken out of the offense a little bit. And then when you shoot 4-14, I didn't think he had his best stuff last night. And I think they're going to need that in order to beat Phoenix. Phoenix, look, you got Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Those are two great players. But their depth, I think, is really what separates them, too. They've got some good depth that they're able to utilize. And that's why if you're Milwaukee, you need all three of your big three going, and they just weren't last night.
Well, the big three, so to speak, of Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton, according to my quick math skills, combined for 81 of the Suns' 118 points.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Antetokounmpo, Middleton, and Holiday combined for 59 of the Bucks' 105. So 81-59 if you're looking at the matchup between the top three players on each team. And I agree, Drew Holiday, 4-for-14 last night, 0-for-4 from 3, minus 16 on the court, only 10 points. Not a great game for him. He had a big game in the clinching game for the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Atlanta Hawks. And Chris Middleton, yes, you mentioned 29 points, but 12 of 26 shooting. Not very efficient. On the other hand, we talked about the efficiency of DeAndre Ayton, 22 points on 8 of 10 shooting.
Yeah.
Hits all 6 of his free throws, 19 rebounds, 17 of which were defensive rebounds. So, you know, DeAndre Ayton, you know, is nothing but not efficient, even though most of his shots are coming within 3 feet of the rim, and he's dunking a lot of them. But hey, if you're big and you're talented and you get open and you can slam,
what you got to do?
That's what you got to do. So, game two tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing if the Bucks can bounce back. I mean, Giannis didn't look out of sorts when he chased down that block.
No.
Was it Devin Booker?
Oh yeah,
that he blocked as he strode down the court like a gazelle. If you know, Bucks gazelle. I don't know how fast Bucks are, but you know, we'll go with gazelle. But yeah, he didn't look out of sorts then. I mean, the guy is, you know, to borrow from his nickname, a freak of nature. So even not at 100%, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Still pretty good.
Still pretty good, yes.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texting in, I watched the match instead. It ended early, but 4 hours of golf left no desire to watch the NBA. There was a interesting golf match yesterday. Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau come out on top against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady.
I did not watch it.
Maybe the last time we'll see Aaron Rodgers playing this year. We'll see what happens.
I heard about that. Was Aaron Rodgers at any point asked about?
Oh yeah,
and
there was a whole lot of sidestepping going on. Mm. He was asked point blank if he was going to be the quarterback for the Packers. He's like, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see. So what, that saga continues to be ongoing.
What do you put his chances of starting for the Packers in week one?
68%.
I feel like that's lower than you previously said.
No.
It's about
the same. Yeah.
It's still on the higher end.
Yeah.
I think you would be an outlier in terms of your confidence in Aaron Rodgers being the starting quarterback in week one.
Well, there was talk about him maybe opting out of the season, and he has not done that, and the deadline to do that has passed. So he's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so where is he most likely to play at this point? I still think Green Bay has got to be the leader in the clubhouse.
Oh, is that a golf joke?
Yes.
Leader in the clubhouse? Did
yes.
you realize you were doing that?
No,
you
I didn't.
Did it? Okay. Well, it was still pretty good.
Thank you.
I mean, training camps start in the NFL in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see if Aaron Rodgers is there, decided to skip all of his mandatory mini camp responsibilities. Not that he is hurting for cash, so he can pay those fines. But yes, that'll be still among the top storylines as we prepare for the NFL season.
So we are off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan from The Athletic in today for Joe Rex Road. And when we come back, we're going to get into the Titans. Some interesting comments on our man TD's podcast, Talking with TD, about Anthony Firkser and what his future could look like. We'll get into those coming up next from a very prominent member of the Titans' past. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And as we do every week here on the show, we had our good friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD, on with us this past Friday. And he talked about the latest episode of the Talking with TD podcast, in which TD sat down and talked with Delanie Walker, former Titans tight end. Of course, TD was out at the Tight End University, held by George Kittle. Basically, every tight end in the world, it seemed like, was out there. Delanie Walker
except for Tim Tebow.
That's true. No Tim Tebow out there at the Tight End University.
Just wanted to make that clear.
I wonder what to make of that. Do we think he was invited?
No.
Probably not.
I wouldn't have invited him either.
Wow. Porth coming off the top rope.
Because he's not a tight end.
Tim Tebow.
Well, George Kittle was asked about that multiple times when he was doing the rounds, interviewing about tight end university, and did a good job of sidestepping the question. Yeah. Basically saying that, you know, they only had so many spots for players, but it was probably a polite way of saying, we're just not that into you, Tim Tebow.
Probably so. So Delanie Walker was there, and he was running some drills. And, of course, Delanie Walker still out there, still on the open market, and we'll see what happens with his future. He had a workout a few weeks ago with the San Francisco 49ers. That did not work out. Actually, the 49ers ended up signing Mykole Pruitt, a former Titans tight end, as well. But Delanie Walker still out there and still available. But one of the interesting things and the takeaways from the latest edition of the Talking with TD podcast with our man Teron Davenport was TD's conversation with Delanie Walker about Anthony Firkser. As we know, we've spent a lot of time talking about Anthony Firkser and what his role could look like in this Titans offense. But Delanie Walker, some very high praise for Anthony Firkser when it comes to this season and what his future could look like in the NFL. Port, do we have that audio? We have that audio from the Talking with TD podcast. Here's what former Titans tight end Delanie Walker had to say about Anthony Firkser.
I mean, you know what? He sat under me for years, and I try to, you know, teach him everything I know, but the dude got wiggles. He can get open. He can get the ball. I think he's going to be elite. Just adding Julio is going to have more opportunities for him over the middle, the matchups against linebackers, and that's going to be hard for them to cover him because he'll destroy a linebacker within seconds. So it's going to be good. I feel like this is going to be a good year for him. I'm excited. I hope he does well because I want him to get paid. So that's what it comes down to. Just hope he does well. I know he's built his confidence over the year, and now he has that opportunity to be the starter. And I told him that last time I saw him, I said, it's your opportunity. Don't lose it because they don't give it to many people often. So he has this opportunity to be great. And I think with Julio and AJ and Derrick Henry, that opportunity is high.
So that was some pretty high praise from Delanie Walker when it comes to Anthony Firkser, saying, quote, he can get open, he can catch the ball, I think he's going to be elite. Your favorite part of that quote, Adam, the dude's got wiggles, and that's how he described Anthony Firkser's ability to get open. Look, obviously, some confidence there displayed in Delanie Walker. What do you make of those comments that Delanie Walker has thrown out there about Anthony Firkser? He thinks he's going to be elite.
That's a word that's thrown around too loosely in sports, elite. First of all, if Delanie Walker is looking for another business idea, if he were to print onesies with the dude got wiggles on it, I would buy one for my soon to be child.
There you go.
The dude got wiggles. I got a chuckle out of that when I heard that yesterday. I appreciate the sentiment. Of course, Delanie Walker is going to say nice things about Anthony Firkser, who is a serviceable tight end in the NFL. But elite? You know, are we ever going to mention Anthony Firkser in the same breath as Travis Kelce or George Kittle?
Probably not.
No, probably not. I understand Delanie's point, though, that with so many other weapons on the field and much of the attention being paid to Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, but especially in the passing game, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, that Anthony Firkser will be able to take advantage or should be able to take advantage of softer matchups against linebackers. But, I mean, what would constitute him becoming elite? I mean, he would need to become, you know, how many touchdowns in a season does Travis Kelce usually get? 10?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't see it. I appreciate Delanie's optimism. And this is with all due respect to Anthony Firkser, I just don't see it.
Yeah, look, the opportunities, if this is the route the Titans go and Anthony Firkser ends up being your starting tight end, which right now, I mean, There's no reason for me to think that's not what they're going to do. We'll see if they can still make a move before free agency and bring in some more depth, even if it's not a number one tight end. I still think there's some room there to add to that room. So we'll see what happens on that front. But right now I'm operating under the assumption that Anthony Firkser is going to be the guy. Look, I think he's got a couple of things going for him. Number one, what Delanie Walker pointed out there is absolutely true. When you're a defensive coordinator and you're preparing for this Titans offense, Anthony Firkser is going to be pretty far down the list in terms of things that worry you. You've got Derrick Henry. You've got A.J. Brown. You've got Julio Jones. Ryan Tannehill spinning the ball back there. So there's a lot of options for this Titans offense that you've got to be aware of if you're a defensive coordinator. And look, Firkser has been a nice player. He's been very good so far for the Titans in the role that they've asked him to play. Now that role is going to be expanding heading into this season. I do think that there is a significant amount of trust there on the part of Ryan Tannehill for Anthony Firkser, and I don't think that can be overlooked in this conversation. But the elite part of this, I just go back to the simple math of it all. Of even if Anthony Firkser has a lot of the tools that you like, there's not enough footballs to go around, right? I mean, you still, when it comes to the options on the offense, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, all those guys are going to be more of a primary option than Anthony Firkser is going to be in this offense. So I think Firkser can still have a really good year. I don't know that I even see it in the table of possibility for him to have an elite year. I think just with the options they have, he's not going to be throwing the ball enough to have an elite year.
So last season, Anthony Firkser had 39 receptions for 387 yards and one touchdown. Travis Kelce last season, 105 receptions, 1,416 yards, and 11 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And I, you know, because I was curious what Travis Kelce's numbers were. I mean, that's exactly right. As you said, you know, I don't think opposing defensive coordinators are going to put a lot of time digesting film of Anthony Firkser. Of course, they'll be aware of him on the field, but their attention is going to be elsewhere. So, as you said, you know, that is something that can be taken advantage of if you're Anthony Firkser. But you know, what do we see the ceiling for Anthony Firkser as this season? Is it the stat line I just read? Is it around 40 receptions? Is it around 400 yards? Is it a couple of touchdowns? Is it more than that? Is it less than that? You know, to me, you know, if Anthony Firkser basically has the same season this season as he did last season, you know, I think that would be reasonable, which is, you know, like I said, 40-ish receptions, around 400 yards receiving, couple of touchdowns, you know, a couple of long catches. He had four receptions of 20-plus yards last year.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I see Anthony Firkser as in this offense.
Well, and they've got to find some way to attack the middle, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You've got A.J. Brown, you've got Julio Jones. We would assume most of the time on the outside, on either side. And, right. And look, they're going to move those guys around. I know that you'll see A.J. Brown in the slot some. You'll probably see Julio Jones in the slot some. I mean, they'll move those pieces around. But last year, when Adam Humphries was hurt, I mean, Anthony Firkser was basically their glorified slot receiver. And
where does Josh Reynolds fit into all of
this? I think he'll probably spend the majority of the time in the slot, but yeah. I think it's obvious at this point the Titans feel like they don't feel like they need that. I guess that glorified designated slot guy. I think they're comfortable moving things around and attacking people with this gigantic receiving core that they have, where everybody's at least 6 foot tall and 240 pounds. So that seems to be the approach that the Titans are going to take. We'll continue this discussion when we come back, taking your thoughts on Anthony Firkser. What do you make of Delanie Walker's comments on the Talking with TD podcast about Anthony Firkser being elite? We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Adam Vinyan in today for Joe Rex Road, who is on vacation right now, talking Anthony Firkser and the Tennessee Titans. Delanie Walker with some strong comments on the Talking with TD podcast, saying he believes that Anthony Firkser can be elite. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ben on the text line says, Firkser might be third on the team in receptions and second in touchdowns, but he'll cost Henry half a yard per carry because of his blocking. And that has been one of the concerns about Anthony Firkser. If he's going to be your full-time starting tight end in line, can he handle the blocking aspect of it? Now, to a certain degree, I think this has been overblown a little bit. I mean, it's not like Anthony Firkser in the last couple of years has not been used to block. I mean, you think back to the overtime winner for Derrick Henry against Baltimore in the regular season last year. Anthony Firkser's on the field. Anthony Firkser has a pretty big block on that play. So it's not like Anthony Firkser is physically incapable of blocking out there. But that has been one of the strengths of Jonnu Smith, was he was a pretty good blocker. And that was not the case when he first came in the league. Jonnu Smith had to work to get to that point, but ultimately he did, and he was a dual threat both in the passing game and in the running game as well. That to me is going to be a lot of how this season plays out for Anthony Firkser. How well can he handle the inline blocking part of this? Because we know, Adam, as many changes that have been made to this offense, and you've got Julio Jones coming in, that's going to change the way you operate to a certain degree, and you're going to be, I would think, a little bit more involved in the passing game this year in terms of the sheer quantity of passes that you throw. But still, probably the bread and butter of this offense is going to be Derrick Henry and the running game. And Anthony Firkser is going to have to hold up his end, his responsibilities there as well. That's going to determine how his season goes. Also, when you start talking about elite tight ends can do both. They can be a really big threat in the passing game, like Travis Kelce and George Kittle are. But the thing that makes Travis Kelce and George Kittle great also, pretty good blockers in the running game as well.
Indeed. And I was looking back at during the break, I was looking back at Delanie Walker's statistics because I was curious to see if Anthony Firkser could be on the level of Delanie Walker with the Titans, because Delanie Walker was a perennial Pro Bowler with the Titans. I'm looking at his last full season, which was 2017 at the age of 33. He had 74 receptions for 807 yards and 3 touchdowns. Of course, the difference being that, I mean, who were the Titans' other weapons?
Exactly.
In 2017 or in 2016 in 2015. They certainly didn't have Julio Jones. They didn't have A.J. Brown. Justin Hunter wasn't really on the same level.
I would say not.
As those two.
That's a hot take.
Yes. That's what we do here on the show. Tepid takes with Adam Vingan.
There you go.
But could Anthony Firkser, Anthony Firkser is not going to have a stat line like Delanie Walker did in his time with the Titans, because as we just said, the weapons have been upgraded. But you're right, being a tight end isn't just about making catches. It's about, providing blocking on the offensive line. And you're right. I remember that play with Derrick Henry in the game against Baltimore. Anthony Firkser played a pivotal role in that touchdown run. But I am fascinated by this. As an observer of the Titans, I am interested in seeing how Anthony Firkser is deployed and whether or not he is ready to be a starter in the NFL full time. I think he can be a serviceable tight end. And as I've said on the show before, when I think about the production of a player, I think of it through the prism of fantasy football, because I like to play fantasy football. Is anybody drafting Anthony Firkser in their fantasy draft?
Maybe later in the rounds, but not anywhere near if you're in your elite tight end.
If you're in a deep league, maybe you pick up Anthony Firkser at the end of the draft, but he's probably a waiver wire acquisition.
Yeah.
And of course, it's not all about fantasy football, but that's how I tend to evaluate players, is would I draft them on my fantasy football team? I'm sorry, Anthony Firkser, you're not going to be on my fantasy football team unless my other tight end gets injured.
Ryan Porth, what do you think of these comments that Delanie Walker made on Talking with TD about what Anthony Firkser's future could look like. He thinks he's going to be elite. Dude's got some wiggle to him, being able to get open. What do you think of these comments? And what do you think constitutes a good year for Anthony Firkser this year in this Titans offense?
Well, Jonnu Smith last year, I thought, had a good year. And it's not like he put up eye-popping numbers, especially when it came to receiving yards.
Yep.
Like, with the addition of Julio Jones, they don't need Anthony Firkser to be elite like Delanie Walker is describing him as. And the comments themselves, I mean, I'm sure Firkser and Delanie are like really good friends. So I'm sure Delanie has seen a lot of behind the scenes things and his wiggles on the practice field.
That's right.
But I take his comments not totally with a grain of salt, but I think they're being a little overblown, because I think you would hear a lot of friends that are, you know, former teammates, you know, prop each other up. I think that's just normal in sports.
I think it is too. And to your point, like, the Titans don't need him to be elite. I mean, you need to build on last year. Look, if you're the starter, I mean, you're going to need to build on those numbers last year. But with this offense, you need Anthony Firkser to get open over the middle and give you another option. And I think he can do that. Like, I think we've seen Anthony Firkser. He can get open. He can make those catches. And as I said before, I mean, I think there's a pretty incredible amount of trust from Ryan Tannehill to Anthony Firkser. So I don't know what his numbers are going to look like this year. I would expect him to go up, given more opportunity, you know, more snaps that he's going to be taking as well. But I don't think the Titans need him to be, you know, an 80-catch, 750-yard guy this year. Like, I think in the role that he plays with this offense, if you told me right now that Anthony Firkser was going to catch 50 passes, he was going to give you 4 or 5 touchdowns, and 550 yards receiving, 600 yards receiving, I'd probably take that right now if I'm a Titans fan, because that sounds like a pretty good supplement to what we expect to be still a very dynamic running game with Derrick Henry, Julio Jones coming into the fold as well. If he looks anything like the Julio Jones that we've seen, going to be a lot of passes thrown his way. Going to be a lot of opportunities for him and A.J. Brown to catch the ball. So I think Anthony Firkser can have a very good year in this Titans offense and not necessarily put up numbers that just blow you away on that front.
Sign me up for 40 receptions and 400 yards. If Firkser can clear those, if he can clear those figures, I would consider that a successful season. Throwing a couple touchdowns.
Jonnu Smith last year had 41 catches, 448 yards, and 8 touchdowns.
Yeah. Now,
if he has those same numbers and maybe half the touchdowns, I would also take that.
Yeah.
I would too. Now, the counter argument to that is, yes, Jonnu Smith had those numbers, but they also lost their left tackle, and that totally changed his role in the offense. If Taylor Lewan can stay healthy the whole year, does that open things up for the tight end a little bit more? I don't know.
Well, you also didn't have Julio last year.
That's true. You definitely did not have Julio Jones last year.
Definitely did not.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens on that front. Look, I think Firkser's a good player. I still have my doubts as to whether or not he's a number one tight end in the NFL. That's up to him now. I mean, he's 26. I think he's come in. He's done a really good job in the role that they've asked him to play, and now they are expanding that role. Can he handle it? I mean, his responsibility in this offense has gone up every year. He had 20 targets in 2018, 24 in 2019. That jumped up to 53 last year. My guess is that's probably going to jump up even more this year. You're probably going to be around 60, 65, 70 targets this year in this offense. Can he continue to handle that elevated responsibility? That's going to be a big question. If he can, that's a pretty good luxury if you're the Titans, because I think a lot of people still feel like maybe a tight end could be added. We heard some people yesterday saying, yeah, Zach Ertz is still out there. Go out there and get Zach Ertz. But if the Titans are confident in Anthony Firkser, which they appear to be, if he can come out and continue to grow in that role and handle more responsibility, that's only a good thing for the Titans. As Delanie Walker said, maybe that ends up with Anthony Firkser getting paid as well.
As Delanie Walker also said, the dude got wiggles.
Yeah, the dude got wiggles. That's what we've learned here today on this. Yeah. On this,
if you take anything from this conversation,
that's right.
The dude got wiggles.
When we come back, speaking of Julio Jones, the Titans getting a lot of love right now in terms of some of these preseason lists and award watch lists and all the stuff that's going on right before training camp begins. There's a lot of talk out there right now about the Tennessee Titans, and a lot of it stems from Julio Jones. What would a bounce-back season look like for Julio Jones? What should expectations be in this offense? We'll get to that coming up next. Adam Bingen alongside Robbie Stanley here. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
At the end of the day, I believe in me. I know what I have in the tank. And we're talking about age is 32. Like, I'm young. Like, in football, you can say it's old, but you either do it or you don't. You know, this game don't change for me. I'm still fast and still strong. And to, you know, the games last year, I just, you know, had an issue where I didn't take enough time to heal up properly. But, you know, that was just my decision on going out there and just playing. There's no excuses, things like that. But I'll be ready to go. For those who questioning my health and things like that, just stay tuned.
That was Titans wide receiver Julio Jones in his introductory press conference with the Titans, telling the haters, those questioning his ability to stay tuned, which got Titans fans very fired up after his introductory press conference here in Nashville. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And they came out with a list on CBS Sports. Cody Benjamin put this together, ranking the top 10 players set to rebound to have a bounce-back season heading into this year. And at number three on the list for CBS Sports was Julio Jones with the Titans. Now, we know last year, 51 catches, 771 yards for Julio Jones, three touchdowns, all of that coming in just nine games, which, you know, as they point out in this article, there's some wide receivers that start around the league that would be fine with a 51-catch, 771-yard season and three touchdowns. But for Julio Jones, those marks were uninspiring. And, of course, we know injuries were the reason. He was hurt, only played in nine games, and now looks to be healthy, looks to be back to the Julio Jones of old, and we'll see how he fits into this Titans offense. My question for you all is, what does a bounce-back season consist of from Julio Jones in a new situation? We know that in all likelihood in this offense, he's probably not going to be targeted as much as he has been in the past. I mean, in 2015, he was targeted 203 times. He's typically right around 150, 170, 157 a couple of years ago in 2019. He gets the ball thrown his way a lot. He'll have plenty of opportunities here with the Titans. It's probably not going to be anywhere near 157 targets. So what does a bounce-back season for Julio Jones consist of, in your opinion, Adam Bingen, as you punch your face in the mic?
I just everybody on the stream just saw that, and everybody listening just heard me punch myself in the chin with the microphone. So last season, as you mentioned, he was not fully healthy. He started nine games. He still had close to 800 yards. He had 51 receptions. You know, to me, a bounce-back season for Julio Jones starts with at least 1,000 yards. And I think that's reasonable because he's Julio Jones. As you said, he's not going to get, like, that's amazing that he was targeted more than 203
times. It's like all they did was just drop back and throw the ball to Julio Jones.
And as a Saints fan, I experienced a lot of those targets watching my favorite team play the Atlanta Falcons twice per season. I am not unhappy that Julio Jones is no longer in the NFC South, though the Saints will be here this season, so they'll still have to play against Julio Jones at least once. To me, it starts with 1,000 yards. To me, I would say a bounce-back season for Julio Jones is at least 1,000 yards and six touchdowns. So that's double the touchdowns from 3 to 6, and about 250 more yards. I think anywhere above that would be gravy. But I think to start, he needs to at least get back to 1,000 yards and get to six touchdowns.
I look at him, and I'm very interested to see how Todd Downing handles this, because we've talked about this. There's only so many snaps to go around. You're going to want to continue to give the ball to Derrick Henry. I know that we've talked about, you know, maybe Darrington Evans coming in and taking some of the carries away from Derrick Henry and the workload for Derrick Henry going down. And all that sounds great, and I think certainly that's part of the plans for the Titans. But it's one thing to be the plan, and then it's another thing when you're in the game and it's in live action and you're watching the effect that Derrick Henry has on the other team. Sometimes it can be very hard to go away from him and to take the ball out of his hand. So I think the targets are going to go down. My guess would be Julio Jones is probably going to end up somewhere around 100 targets, somewhere around 100, 110 targets, and that may be on the high end of things. We talked about it, and David Beauclair has talked about this as well. He'd be surprised if Julio Jones ends up with, you know, 75 catches this year. It's going to be kind of a different way of doing things for Julio Jones in this offense. Now, I think some of the catches, I mean, he's been a guy that's averaged 15.2 yards per reception his entire career, which is an amazing number. I think he's got a chance in this offense to average more than that. I think with the weapons they have and the way they could use Julio Jones, he could be around 17, 18, 19 yards per catch. So I agree. Like, I think he's going to get to 1,000 yards. I think the number one bounce back for Julio Jones has got to be staying healthy. Like, can you play in at least 15 of the 17 games? Like, can you be available most weeks? I think at this point, if you've had Julio Jones on your fantasy team the last few years, you know that there's probably going to come a point this season where he's maybe not practicing all that much and he's questionable throughout the week, but he finds a way to get out there and to play. I'm fine with that if I'm the Titans. I still think he's got a lot left in the tank. I mean, I think Julio Jones is poised to have a very good season with this Titans team. So I would classify a bounce-back season as somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 to 70 catches at least. I would say right around 11, 1,200 yards. And the touchdowns is always interesting with him because that's the one part of his game that really doesn't add up all that much to me is, you know, he's got elite speed. He can catch the ball. He's a great route runner. He's one of the best receivers that we've ever seen play the game at the NFL level. But the touchdowns haven't always been there. Like in 2017, he played 16 games. He had 3 touchdowns that year. He's had, you know, an 8 touchdown year, a 10 touchdown year back in 2012, his second season in the league. But the touchdowns haven't really been there with as much regularity as you might think with a guy like Julio Jones. I'm interested to see in this offense, when they get to the red zone, can he be more of a factor in the red zone with Derrick Henry, with A.J. Brown? And I think a lot of his touchdowns may come outside of the red zone on the deep ball, but I am interested to see what the touchdown numbers look like for Julio Jones this year in this offense, if he can stay healthy, because that's been something that's been a little bit odd about his career. Not as many touchdowns as you might think a guy like him would have.
Well, if you're Ryan Tannehill, you're in the red zone and you have an opportunity to get, you know, to throw a touchdown or to hand off for a touchdown, you know, who are you looking at first? Are you looking at A.J. Brown, who can literally carry multiple defensive backs into the end zone as he did last year? Julio Jones, not a small man by any stretch of the imagination. You know, are you giving it to Derrick Henry?
That's probably my guess is the first option, is Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry.
That's my guess.
Even from, like, the 20-yard line. Like, you're just entered the red zone.
Yeah, it's probably first going to Henry.
Yeah.
And just seeing what happens after that. But to your point, I mean, you've got an embarrassment of riches at that point if you're Ryan Tannehill in the red zone. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can go. I mean, we just spent 30 minutes talking about Anthony Firkser. I think he could be a pretty good weapon in the red zone as well.
Yes.
So there's a whole lot of ways you could go with it if you're Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps I'll revise my bounce back season threshold, but, like, you know, I'm still amazed by the fact he was targeted 203 times. Is that has to be, maybe it's not an NFL record.
It's got to be close.
It's got to be close to an NFL record. But yeah, I think if he's targeted, I don't know, 120 times. I mean, do you think that's a reasonable number in this offense?
I think that's that would be on the high end. Yeah, I think if he gets targeted 120 times, I think he'd take that all day long in this offense.
So if he's targeted around 100 times, catches 60 to 70 balls, has somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 yards, and, you know, 3 to 6 touchdowns. I mean, that would be a good season for Julio Jones. And as someone who has had Julio Jones on his fantasy team multiple times, I can certainly attest to the issues that one has when you're trying to plan your week when you know that Julio Jones isn't going to practice.
Not much practice.
You got to pick someone off the waiver wire. You got to make sure that Julio Jones is going to play. But look, to his credit, he always – I mean, outside of last season – you know, he always plays.
Yeah.
I mean, in the previous three seasons, 2017 through 2019, easy for me to say, he only missed one game. You know, he started 16 in 2017, 16 in 2018, and 15 in 2019. So even if he's banged up, he still plays. So I agree with him when he says, you know, if people are writing him off because of one injury-plagued season, you know, stay tuned.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Josh texting in, 88 receptions, 1,083 yards, 12.3 yards average per catch, and 7 or 8 touchdowns from Julio Jones.
That's
Josh
very specific.
88 catches, 1,083 yards.
Is Josh on Pro Football
so
Reference
Josh
right
is
now?
Laying it out. I don't know if this is – this could be an early edition of Call Your Shot Friday for Josh. Throwing out exactly what he thinks happens for Julio Jones.
So his career, you know, for his career, he averages 15.2 yards per reception.
Yeah.
And what did you say? 18 to 19?
I think that's got a chance to go up in this offense. I really do.
He's never had more than 17.8,
yep,
which was his rookie season. Last year he had 15.1, the year before that 14.1, the year before that 14.8. You know, the deep threat hasn't been there for the Titans in recent seasons. Julio Jones could be that player. He has the skill to pretty much do whatever he wants on the field. But that is an interesting point you bring up. I wonder if he does set a career high this season in yards per reception.
When we come back, we will switch gears and get into a little college football talk, including some fascinating news out of the University of Miami when it refers to the name, image, and likeness laws that have come into effect. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.